Welcome to Manager Tools. Top 10 hiring mistakes. Mistake number 10, being surprised. Part 1. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. How can I avoid being surprised with someone resigning? What should I do when someone resigns suddenly? Well, if you want to answer these questions and more, keep listening.
For those leaders or HR professionals who are fairly knowledgeable about our Manager Tools Effective Manager content, you can now purchase the MT annual license with Roadmap and Enterprise. For $250 per person, each manager receives show notes, access to the interview creation tool, and Roadmap, which guides them through the rollout of the Trinity over a full year's time. Each manager will get reminders, guidance, and the ability to track their actions in less than 1 minute per week. Additionally, the organization and its leaders get access to an enterprise data portal. Measure how the group is adopting those Trinity behaviors. It's an exciting way for you, your executives and leaders, or HR professionals to measure management behaviors. It's applicable for 10 users or more. Contact Maggie at maggie@managertools.com or check it out on our website, managertools.com/organizations.
We've recommended in the past every manager and definitely every executive have a hiring strategy and a process. And it's not hard. And we've built one, surprise. And you high C's out there will love it because it's proven with like tons checklist. Of historical data and all that kind of stuff. So let's start with what happens before your process kicks in. How can you avoid being surprised? And then if you are surprised, shame, but if you are surprised, then what do you do about it?
Yes, exactly. So you folks, you'll now step aside while I give the high D version of this podcast, the outline. We recommend you have a hiring process. We recommend you conduct one-on-ones. We recommend you conduct a regular retention analysis. We also recommend you don't attempt to retain people who have resigned. And we've for much of this stuff, we have other guidance, but we're putting it all together to make it easier to find. We encourage you to wish people well because they may be a boomerang, who knows. You can also expect a professional transition from them, whether they want to give it to you or not. It's reasonable for you to expect it and define it, and we'll define it. And then we also think you need to, anytime you lose somebody, surprise or otherwise, you'll need to do a workload and a priority analysis. Now, having said that, we're talking about several different concepts here, and we are not in this cast going to lay out your hiring process. We're not going to lay out the details of a retention analysis. If we did everything in this outline of high-level response and gave you all the tactics, this thing would be 250 pages. It'd be its own book. That's not the purpose of this cast. The purpose of this cast is to tell you what to do and to remind you that there are resources we have already created for you, which you can avail yourself of. And it also gives us a chance to reannounce the retention tool because we've already done the retention analysis work as well. You can do retention analysis without our retention tool, but licensees will love that when we're able to release it.
Yeah, good. I thought we might lose a bunch of high Ds given your statement at the beginning about high Ds, just listen to the outline, you're done. But number five is wish them well, and they just won't be able to wrap their head around that. So
yeah, they'll have to
listen to figure out how we're going to convince them to do that.
Good. Okay. So one of your people has resigned. What do you do? And surprised you. Okay. All right. Well, let's think of this a little bit differently than, oh my gosh, let's have a kernel panic. The first thing you do, the way you reduce surprise resignations is having a hiring process. If you have a published, and I'm not talking about you know the process, folks. I mean, you and everybody on your team or in your org has been briefed on it. And I know you don't want to go to the trouble of creating one. You don't have time for it. That's fine. That's why we're here. We'll create one for you. You can modify it. Now, if you're not willing to spend a half an hour one weekend out on the back porch modifying our existing work and then be able to spend 30 minutes sometime in the next 3 or 4 weeks after you've modified our work, telling your folks, okay, here's our hiring process. so that you can create a playbook. If you're not willing to do that, well, turn in your spikes. But having a published process, it's written down, okay? And you train people to it. So in other words, part of your process will include behavioral interviewing, and you train people on how to do behavioral interviewing. It's not hard, okay? We can teach you. You can come to one of our conferences. There are other ways to learn as well. But if you have that, if you have a hiring process published, trained to, it'll reduce your surprise resignations. And it will improve your ability to respond to them effectively when they do occur. That's all we can do. Look, there's no way any of us can say we can avoid being surprised 100% of the time. You can't. That's the whole point of surprise. No matter how good we are, no matter how trusted you are with your folks or whatever, it's going to happen. And, you know, we managers need to come to grips with the fact that we're no longer managing other people's careers. Okay? You're managing yours. They're managing theirs. Directs no longer assume, like they did years ago, that the organization is going to take care of them. In fact, that has, in my opinion, engendered some animosity, some inherent adversarialness that, unfortunately, among younger people today, no offense, please, somebody, one of the millennials or Gen Zs, come to my defense here in case anybody tries to carpet bomb me. But if you were raised to believe that your company's not going to take care of your career, and you were also raised to believe that large organizations, except Google, Apple, and Facebook, are rapacious, dastardly, evil corporate tyrannies, it would be no surprise that you would see the necessity for you to have food, clothing, and shelter, need to be balanced by your own defensiveness against your organization. And at some point, you'll go through enough organizations and you realize, no, there are organizations that are good. And you don't need to have an adversary relationship with them. Or put differently, you can understand why your organization wants you to manage your career. Sorry, guys, but it's because it's cheaper. And you can manage your career yourself and at the same time, love where you are.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be adversarial. Yes, there are parts of your relationship with your company where there is tension, but that doesn't need to escalate into adversity, into an adversarial nature. It doesn't. And it's up to you, and it's up to you as the manager, and it's up to you as an individual to decide what kind of relationship you want. We should not assume that our company is managing our careers or that it's managing our direct's careers. And look, when your company does it, great, it's a bonus. But that's all it is, and you shouldn't count on that. And that's not a ding on organizations. It's a function of the world we live in. Now, look, some of you are listening right now and going, why is he even talking about that? Was that even a thing that companies managed people's careers? Oh, yes, it was a thing. It was the thing. That's what was done. And I have to tell you, I had talked to somebody the other day. In fact, I just did an hour-long Zoom call with a young professional who wanted some help with her career. And I was trying to find out what she wanted to do and where she wanted to do it and so on. And I was talking to somebody and they said to me, I can't even believe that people used to do things that way. He thought what he was saying made him cool because he was young and hip and on the edge. But everyone around him that this person said this to, I was among friends, were embarrassed for him that he would sort of denigrate the way things were done before there was Facebook. As an example, that wasn't what he was talking about. And one of the more senior people in our group said, well, you may not believe it was done, but World War II was done. Meaning, just because it happened before you doesn't mean you should have any trouble believing it. And you should trust the people that you trust to tell you the way things were. And managing careers by the company was normal. Now, look, the way we're doing it today is more effective in the long run for more people. Okay. It's as if, and I don't know that I've ever said this on air, and I feel bad for saying it. Many of you know I'm a baseball fan, but this is the reserve clause. Okay. This is the end of the reserve clause. You are living in a post Curt Flood world. If you don't know who Curt Flood is, I'm sorry. He's a cultural icon, a baseball player who was finally the one that sued, and a heck of a ball player too, who sued Major League Baseball for the right to go play for any team. The reserve clause allowed companies to hire somebody and then keep them on their payroll. And if you think about the incentives and disincentives and the economics of the entire league having a payroll where people can move back and forth, talk about a frictionless talent market, relatively speaking, as opposed to one ball club owning all those contracts and you can't go anywhere else. Imagine, compare that in terms of friction to the present system of free agency. And you can see why it's better. Now, there are traditionalists like me who say, we wish they'd all stay with their same club, but that's just, we're just wishing for a time when...
simpler times.
Yeah, when there were spitballers and anyway. But look, I want to say that again. This present evolution of career management in the world today is more effective in the long run for more people. More people are going to benefit by taking control of their own careers. And that means if they choose to leave your company, you're the one that's going to be left holding the bag as the manager. Okay? But you'll notice I didn't say it's better for everybody, because there are an awful lot of people who aren't managing their career. And yet you're at risk with those people too, because they get an offer, because things get hot. And maybe you think that they're good, but they're not great. And so you don't really work hard on your relationship with them, and the trust factor isn't there, and they leave because you haven't created strong enough ties that bind. Those people who don't know how to manage their own careers, who don't have robust networks, who don't necessarily think of themselves as even having a career, they struggle when corporations act as if the company itself isn't managing that employee's career. And so that employee's career, whether he believes he has a career or not, is much more at risk than you might expect. And look, the moment companies stopped managing people's careers, guys, is the moment where the companies began feeling less shame about layoffs. Now, believe me, I think shame is one of the truly great emotions in the world. Shame is, I'm sorry, guys. I'm really sorry to tell you this, but if you're looking for, if you don't like that there's shaming, I'm not talking about actively shaming someone else. I'm talking about the ability of a human individual to engage in behavior that later causes them shame. Shame is an important cultural part of being a human being. And don't get me wrong, I understand that we're in a layoff world, but companies ought to be ashamed of themselves when they do it. Layoffs are always a tacit admission that executive leadership didn't do their job well enough. In other words, we predicted X and we only got half X, so therefore the new hires we got to get rid of. And the problem with that is they're not the ones who suffer in the layoff. And they ought to be ashamed. And believe me, I know many thousands of them who are. And there are many of them who say you lead two lives professionally. The life you lead up until you're part of the people who make a decision about who gets laid off, and the part of your life you lead after that. And these two things are related, the layoff culture and the you are managing your own career culture. Okay. But the fact that the company isn't managing people's careers doesn't mean people choose the right responses to what's happening in their world. And most people actually aren't thinking necessarily as broadly as they could be about what's going on in the world and how they ought to insulate and protect and defend and extend their own career. People don't have their career documents current. They don't maintain their networks. We all live I surely hope that if you're listening to this, you know, you've heard me say this before. We all live in an at-will employment world. That means your company can fire you at will. And if you're wondering what that means, think about the war movies that are perhaps historically based where they say, fire at will, right? When the Navy guns say, fire at will, that means fire as fast as you can, boys. We are all living in an at-will world, but we haven't all evolved well to handle that. In the same way that we have people who know they're at-will employees and they can get the axe because their company has already proven they'll do layoffs, they don't have a career management document. I mean, I don't know what the statistics are. I'm sure there aren't any statistics, but we can make anecdotal guesses. But the will, is it willful blindness? Is it just fear of confronting one's own imminent professional execution? I don't know. Is it a lack of time? I don't know. I know a lot of people. I talk to so many people who complain about a lack of time. And then, as the saying goes, get bored on a lazy Sunday afternoon. So the same thing is true for managers. Managers don't understand that there is a new response to the individual managing their own world. They may very well feel very trusting and related to you and close to you and want you to be successful and want to stay with you and then get an offer they can't refuse. And we take full responsibility in part because our guidance to them is you don't owe your boss a word, not a word. Okay. Now, might you choose to tell your boss? Sure. Could that turn out good? Yes. Could it turn out bad? Yes, it could. That's why we tell you don't tell your boss, because we don't know your boss. Think about this, guys. Both of these things exist. And I mentioned shame. Compare the social response, the societal response to a company who lays someone off, the company is shamed, with the response of an individual choosing a better job for themselves. That's not shamed. That's considered a celebration of freedom. Both sides are at will, but only one side, the individual side, is celebrated. But too many of us managers, because of our role power, because of our full schedules, fail to realize that the at-will world means we as individual managers bear the brunt of retention responsibilities in our organizations. Full stop. Guys, too many of us are behaving as if the company is somehow taking care of this retention thing. Maybe it's the pay increases. Maybe it's benefits improvements. Maybe it's culture initiatives. Oh, yeah, that'll help. Okay. I just read something recently about we're going to do an extra beer bash.
To solve retention? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, good.
I mean, yeah, that'll take away somebody's driver's license, if they say that. And I'm not making a DUI claim. I'm making a you're not old enough to vote claim if you're saying another beer bash will somehow affect your retention. Yeah, corporate efforts to impact retention on your team are marginally effective. Oh, if everybody got a doubling in salaries, that'd be different, but that never happens, except in the movies.
Yeah, it's individual managers. That's what affects it, right?
Exactly. If individual managers want to retain people because it makes your job immensely easier, benefits the company too, by the way, but really you could be selfish. If we don't take charge of retaining our people, no corporate efforts will get us there. Okay. I'm sorry. That was a long-winded sort of soliloquy, but it's necessary. You guys need to understand the why. I saw somebody told me the other day, oh yeah, I listened to your podcast. You repeat yourself. I said, yeah, I do a lot. I mean, in fact, dude, you should never listen again because I'm going to remind myself over and over again to continue repeating myself just so that you don't listen to my show. We've got to understand the underlying rationale so that when you get in a situation that's a little bit different, maybe all of a sudden you go to a governmental organization and you realize things are different, but how are they different? Well, now you understand the underlying rationale for what you're used to be. It'll make it easier for you to figure out, to infer based on behavior, what kind of cultural norms and biases exist in your new organization.
Now listed on our website at manager-tools.com/training, you'll find multiple virtual effective manager and virtual effective communicator sessions. register for one, express interest in others, and check back often. We're adding new events all the time, and we hope to see you there.
So, the point of this first bullet, though, is we want a hiring process playbook. And again, it does two things for you. First, if you have a playbook, you will increase the quality of your hires. You won't make as many mistakes, in part because you won't be thinking about the process. You'll be thinking about your hiring decision. That's the problem with doing things ad hoc. You're busy thinking about the thing you're doing while doing it. Okay? You shouldn't be thinking about the strategy while you're engaged in one of the tactics. If you make mistakes in hiring, you're going to have more surprise resignations. And any mistake you make in hiring inevitably, almost inevitably, shows up in retention stats being driven downward in the future. But in addition, if you've got a playbook and everybody on your team knows it, then when there is a surprise opening, there's no panic. There's no wondering. We just run the playbook and you become super efficient at it. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've just loved it when they're doing a post-game interview with some football player and they said, were you surprised when they did this play? No, actually, we knew that was in their playbook. We knew they liked to run it on second, third downs. They had never run it on fourth down, but we had played so many times that when we saw that formation and we knew they had 8 yards, we knew that was a possibility. And the moment they came off the line, we knew it was coming. And so we did what we had trained to do. That's how playbooks are supposed to work. And all it takes is the manager going through the process. We'll write it for you over the course of the next year. And it just takes you teaching your folks how to do it and then making them stick to it every single time. That evolution, that iteration, that situation, in this case, surprise resignation comes up. If you don't have a known process, you increase the chances of being surprised and you decrease your effectiveness and speed of the response to each one of your surprises, which means you'll get more surprises. So, I've said it a couple of times, a couple of different ways. Let's be clear. Over the course of the next year, guys, we will lay out every step in the Manager Tools effective hiring process. We're going to do that in part thematically by having a series of the top 10 hiring mistakes. And we're going to show how the Manager Tools effective hiring manager process addresses that. Some of them specifically and directly with a specific question and a specific answer, in other ways systemically with things like having a process so that you know what to do when somebody resigns and surprises you. And one thing you don't do, even though we've already talked about this, is counter offer.
Indeed.
And in fact, I realized this after I got done. You know, we have the Effective Hiring Manager interviewing book. Really, Mike, I would argue I might could have called that the effective interviewing manager, because hiring to me is a much more systemic strategic idea. It is about the future talent needs of the organization and so on. Mm-hmm. But it is written for an individual manager, and so therefore it was a hiring process for a manager. But the Manager Tools effective hiring process will be more significant than what we even had in the Effective Hiring Manager, the book. Because it'll include, literally, at the end, there'll be an entire playbook rather than just teaching the concepts.
One thing that you can do as a manager to prevent surprises, and resignations being one of those surprises, but just in general, eliminate surprises, would be to have manager tools one-on-ones.
Hooah, yeah.
All right, Mark, I think that's a good point to stop here.
I went a little longer than we expected. Yeah, I feel bad.
Giving lots of information.
I know people have other stuff to do.
I've been surprised before. Yeah, shocker. Oh, shocker. Dude. Like, I've made mistakes. I've been surprised. And, dude, I would have done anything to avoid that surprise. Anything. Because it was painful. one, I lost somebody, and not just, and unfortunately, it wasn't somebody in the bottom 2% of my organization, yeah. It was somebody in the top 2% of the organization, and we were in a hiring freeze. So it was just so painful. Had I known about it, I could have saved myself a lot of pain. So it's a good topic.
Yeah. Well,
where this were goes you? Back where were something. You like 30 years
ago? Yeah. So what's funny is it goes back to a theme that I've mentioned several times. I've just had this theme in my head lately about being proactive, being prophylactic about things, and the best healthcare is wellness. And I've told the story several times, or alluded to the story several times in my daily things. I think in light of COVID-19, I think I'm come up to issue 90, Mike. 90. That's 18 weeks. What is that? That's 4.5 months we've been doing this. And it's, you know, the old saying of, when did Noah build the ark? And the answer is before the rain.
That's right.
Right. And that's what managers are supposed to do. We're supposed to wear our belt and our suspenders, right? We're supposed to always have an extra pair of shoes. You never know. There's supposed to be an extra dress shirt or an extra blouse in the desk drawer for the situation where you have a big presentation and you spill coffee on yourself, right? That's what we do. Executives are a little bit more out there. Managers are about dotting the I's and crossing the T's to some degree. And the more I think about it, the more I got worried, actually, in the last few months that we were talking about topical things, but we weren't connecting them all in a way to show how recommendations we make had proactive benefits in the future, systemic benefits in the future. I always picture something I call a hydraulic jump. If you've ever seen a fountain that has a flat and then the water spills over a flat edge and then drains down, a hydraulic jump is when the water speeds up, it actually, the top of the water is lowered, even though there's no pressure on it to do so. And, you know, I want our managers who are listening to us to hear our guidance to put in place these things. And then 6 or 8 months later, have them look around and go, nothing bad has happened this week. Or if something bad happens, somebody addressed it real quickly. It's like, no, I got that. We're good. Yeah, this thing came up, but we handle it with that thing we set up a couple months ago, and so we're good. That's what I want.
Yeah, life gets better when that happens.
Yeah, sure. Indefinitely.
Good. All right, we'll continue next week.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks, partner.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great one. So long.